Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My returning guest tonight, and it is always a pleasure to talk to him, is Bernd Heinrich, biologist and writer. And we're talking about his latest book, Racing the Clock, Running Across a Lifetime. Bernd, how are you doing? This is Mark Lynch, and it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, thank you very much, Mark. It's a pleasure to be on. Yeah, thank you.
This is a very different book. It's a book about your career in running simultaneously with your career in biology. But it's also really a memoir, and it's a book about aging, but it's not an advice book. I want to make that clear.
It's not a what?
An advice book.
Advice book. No, it's not.
So what prodded you? What sort of prompted you to write this? Was it COVID?
excuse me. Well, actually, I wanted to. I was thinking, you know, turning 80 would be interesting to see what I could do at my age.
You told me that the last time in the talk that you were thinking about doing that.
Yeah,
and I was frightened for you.
Yeah. Well, I should have been frightened. and then I was even more frightened with the COVID. So anyway, I didn't think there would be any races where I could do that. And so that was the idea to do it and to talk about the experience and to tie that in with biology and the history. But you know, I'd signed the contract to do the book, and the idea was to see if I can get a record for my age. So that fell out, and so I said, well, you know, I would just go with the flow and kind of see what I would come up with and improvise.
And it ended up being it's a beautiful book. It's a wonderful book.
Well, I'm glad you like it. Thank you.
One of the things is, although we have talked several times, many times, about biology, and I knew that you were a passionate runner, I never knew your career in running. And after reading this book, my mind was blown.
Well, my mind is blown too when I look back and says, how did that happen?
I know it's the weirdest thing, but let's start talking generally about the book before we get into specific races.
Okay.
This is also a book about time, about the reality of time and aging, and our clocks. Talk about that. We are victims of we are slaves to our biological clocks.
That's right, and you know all of life is runs by a biological clock. It's always a matter of timing, yeah, and it's so ubiquitous that. It refers to running too, and when we run, and how fast we run, and when we run, and when we get up, and when we go to bed, everything, yeah.
And we can't do anything about it. We can maybe extend it a little bit by living certain ways, but basically, we're on the timer.
Yeah, we're on the timer. We can stretch it this way and that way and shorten it and lengthen it a little bit, but it's definitely within fairly strong constraints.
However, you have definitely pushed the envelope.
Well, I was really trying to by trying to run 100 K at 80.
Well, let's start talking about you in running. Do you always remember running? It's interesting when you have you talk about your memories in northern Germany. Is it Hindheide Forest?
Yeah.
You talk about I probably just ran everywhere because I didn't even think about it.
I never thought about it. No, not at all.
And and that's what young people do.
Yeah, they don't think about it. No, they do it naturally. Yeah.
And after World War II, you came to Maine, and you were in the Goodwill Hinckley Home Farm while your parents were doing research elsewhere. Uh-huh. When did you first realize that, you know, running is something that I'm going to be doing a lot of?
Well, there at Goodwood we had cross-country running, and you know, I wasn't you know, they had a basketball team, but I wasn't tall enough. I was short and skinny, and I wasn't going to be, you know, I tried to go out for it, and I did pretty well at skiing too. And so I was thinking, first of all, cross-country skiing, and I did pretty well in skiing, actually. And then ultimately, it was kind of a tug of war between running and skiing. But there was a cross-country team, and I went out for the cross-country team. And the first year, you know, I just barely made the team. And the second year, I won, you know, all of our meets. I think 10 meets. I was first in every one. I couldn't believe it.
Well, you were called an ace at that point.
Yeah, ace is five, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so I was kind of a bad boy. I was ready to be kicked out, and then I started winning races, and suddenly, you know, the principal, you know, was even announcing, you know, the results at the convocation in the morning. And so, you know, I realized, geez, this is pretty good. This is pretty good. So I like more of it.
Now, somebody asks you in the book, and I'm really interested in your response to this, is that what is more important to you, natural history or running?
Well,
or is that just a false choice? Why not both?
I think that's a false choice. It's less comparing apples to oranges. You know, it's very, very different. And but you know, they are connected. So they're connected because, you know, running is a kind of biology, and we're an animal, and we're a running animal. For primates, we are just way up there, and that is very special. Compared to other primates, so you know that's very interesting from a biological perspective. You know, as somebody who studies animals, you always look at, you know, why they are unique and how they are unique and why is it, and so you know, I'm just another animal subject there.
But it is amazing to read this book about the parallel developments of you in natural history and running, and they just mesh.
Yeah.
They just mesh together, and
totally,
some people
yeah.
can't fathom that you could do that. Now you go to the University of Maine in Orono, where they have a great cross country team.
Mm-hmm.
But you also didn't you travel with your parents to Tanganyika, as it used to be called? It's Tanzania now.
Yeah, that was the year they got independence. Yeah, I took a year off at the University of Maine. I was, you know, I'd been a couple of years running, and I was really, you know, integrated with the team, and I really loved it. And actually, I got elected captain for the next year, and then I just opted out and went to Africa instead. And I don't think I
was that a tough choice. Was that a tough choice for you?
It was a very tough choice because I had a lot of allegiance to the. To the team, and you know, we had a chance to win the Yankee Conference, and
it's a big deal.
You know,
I felt
they were pissed off now because I wasn't there to help them. So you know, it was a you know team effort kind of thing, and but anyway, I felt you know I had to do it because my father wasn't ever going to do it again, and it was a chance of a lifetime. So,
but your father was worried about your running too much. Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, he was of the idea that that you only had so many heartbeats or so many steps in you,
and you're going to use them all up and running.
I was going to, yeah, and he was afraid I was going to use them all up.
There's a lot of people that think things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So you go from the University of Maine, you go to UCLA. And you, uh-huh. And you start in the DNA lab where you're sort of up and on your own, and you yeah. came as in the typical Bernd Heinrich fashion, which you've become famous for. You started to ask some interesting questions.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, how moths could fly in California, the desert heat of California? It's such a simple, basic question, but nobody knew. Yeah. Nobody knew at all.
Well, you know, they had thought about it, and there were some, there was, actually, there was some research done on it, but they had, you know, studied them in a jar. And not out in the wild. And so they got some lab results, but they didn't match with what the animals were actually doing in the in their natural habitat. And so I was a naturalist, kind of always interested in observations of my own out in the wild, you know, what's happening out there. And I could see, and I actually took measurements out in the field, out in the Anzabrego Desert, catching moths and grabbing and stabbing them and seeing they had at a very high body temperature, much higher than ours, actually. That was very different from what they did in the lab. So then I found out that the problem was getting rid of heat rather than generating enough. I made some discoveries, and that was
what they're doing is they're transferring excess heat to their abdomen. Which acts as a heat radiator, is that right?
Exactly. It's just like the radiator of a car, yeah. Like the motor is a flight motor, it's the muscles, and then there's a radiator, it's the abdomen.
And you end up even relating that to your running. At one point, and this is going to sound incredible to people, but you ran a 24-hour race.
Yeah.
As a 43-year-old.
Yeah, I was 43. And that's an American record.
I can't imagine a teenager running that race. Well, let's back up for a minute. This is on an inside track, right?
Uh-huh.
So talk to me about how you even like thought this was a good idea.
Well, I didn't think it was a good idea. I went there at the Bowden track, and I wanted to run 100 miles or kilometer, I forgot which now.
Well, you do both. You end up running both.
Yeah, well, on the track. But I didn't want to run anymore. but then it was a very hot day, and I know I couldn't really run fast, you know, to get that. And to take advantage of, you know, the coolness in the night, I, in the last minute, switched and said, okay, I'll run the 24-hour race. It's actually, you know, the race director said, you know, they would do the timing. Normally it would have been, you know, a 24-hour, excuse me. It was a shorter race, and I had to decide to do it. To make it longer, and so it's a last-minute switch.
A last-minute switch to a 24-hour race.
Yeah.
And you thought that was a good idea. Now, I want to ask you, what happens to your body over the course of that race? And you talk about this in the book. Like, what was going on in your mind as you're tracking down the kilometers?
Well, it was saying this is once in a lifetime.
Yeah, that's good for about an hour.
And then another hour, and then another hour.
But there must, I mean, did you notice changes going on in your mind? How did you sleep? Mm. Did you not, you just didn't sleep?
No, I didn't sleep, but I actually, I think for, you know, in a straight lapse, I would sometimes just try to kind of make believe I was sleeping. I was trying to just go blank and maybe actually even close my eyes for a few seconds on the straightaway.
Wow.
I was trying to just minimize mental effort. And everything, kind of get it out of mind, pain and everything else.
Wow.
But then I remember I really perked up. It was especially hard in the middle of the night. I said, you know, is this ever going to end? But then when I heard, you know, in dawn, I heard the first crow call, and, you know, I almost cried. I said, this is going to end. And it ended at, I think it was 9 or 10 o'clock. I forgot what it was.
Now, were you becoming more and more aware of your body as you ran that long? Like, were you start to becoming very self-conscious about different parts of your body and your steps?
I don't think so, no.
So you were just like in another mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were in like an altered state of being.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
When you finished that race, they had to bring you to the hospital.
I don't think they had to, but they did.
No, Bern, they had to bring you to the hospital.
No, they did not. They did not. The thing is, I was way overheated. You know, it was really hot, and I was running fast, and I was overheated, and and what they did was, you know, they immediately put ice all over me. You know, I kind of crashed and put cold water, and I started shivering like crazy because the body had suddenly, you know, the body temperature had suddenly gone down, this huge change. And but anyway, you know, they hauled me to the hospital, and in half an hour I was recovered.
Well, you know, what's amazing you write about it in the book is that everybody else was worried about you because you're shivering and you're
yeah,
you're,
yeah.
And you yourself were as happy as anything.
Yeah, I was.
Because you had done the race.
Yeah, I was done, yeah.
Oh, God.
And I was cooled off, too.
That helps. You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My returning guest tonight is Bernd Heinrich, biologist and writer. And we're talking about his latest book. It is a really incredible read, Racing the Clock, Running Across a Lifetime. So were you doing in an extreme version of what you had discovered about the moths and other insects and heat dumping?
Exactly.
I swear you did this race just so that you could prove your point.
That was it. I never thought of it that way, but that's true. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Now you... Yes, I was right. So there.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Now, I want to say that, and I want to make sure I understood this right. Again, at the very beginning of your very long field research career, you want to get this research that you had originated on how moths radiate heat.
Uh-huh.
And you give it to another professor, and am I mistaken that your original, I mean, very original research was published by somebody else?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
No. That's confusion there. actually, similar research had been done, but they got, you know, like I said, they had it in the jar, and they had it under the wrong conditions, and they misinterpreted it.
Oh, my God.
And they didn't do the right experiments.
Oh, God. Well, it's funny because it always sounds like you were treated as the outsider in the academic world in the beginning.
Well, not really. I mean, I made discoveries. That's kind of coming from the outside, I suppose. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, they seemed like they all wanted to stay in their labs, and you were the one that was going outside.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Foolish man. He was actually going to watch the creatures in the in their natural habitat.
Yeah, yeah.
That sort of seems like an obvious idea now.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, when you were in California, mm-hmm. you became part of a running group that was really important to you to this day.
Yeah.
Talk about Max. Is it Mishy?
Yeah. Yeah, so for recreation, for noontime, I'd go down on the track, and there are a bunch of us who were, you know, kind of just hobby runners, and we somebody said, well, let's make it a club, and they called it the Marin Racers, Max Michie was one of the guys there. I only found out later that he'd been a fellow refugee from Europe, and he had become a runner, and he was in New York City. And so, you know, we would do intervals on the track, and so we started, you know, running in races. And so, kindled my passion for running, and it was all for fun. But you know, we got better, and so decided, well, let's, you know, run some races. Yeah, and so, and I finally said, well, geez, they're talking about this marathon thing. Maybe I should try one of those.
But of course. And yeah. So what was the first actual marathon, 26 miles? Did you do the Boston Marathon? You ran the Boston Marathon at age 40.
Yeah, I ran it a couple of times. And at 40, I set the, you know, the age group over 40 record. But I did my best run just preparing for the Boston, actually. Actually, before that, I tried for the Olympic trials and missed by a few seconds, actually, for the Olympic trials. You know, I got better and better, and then I won on the trials for Boston. I won the San Francisco, I forgot the name of it now, marathon. And there were like 3,000 entries, and
wow.
I came in first. And basically passed the winner within feet. You know, I caught up to him right at the tape. And so I did, you know, a lot of the passing at the end. So that's why I decided to go into ultramarathon, because I was here at the end of the marathon, 26 miles. I was just getting started. So what I really have to do is run an ultramarathon. That was the reason. I said, well, you know, I'm going to run that U.S. record for the 100K because I can do it, you know, if I try. And so I did.
And you started running increasingly longer races, the 50K in Vermont, 100K
yeah.
in Chicago, 100-mile yeah. race, which for people who don't
yeah.
know metrics is a longer race.
Exactly.
You did you set the 100-mile record in your group in Montreal.
Yeah. Not my group. That was the American record.
Wow. Now, you know, it was interesting. You wrote about that when you ran that, your body started to smell of urea.
Yeah.
Why is that happens?
Well, I think it's burning protein.
Okay.
You know, it's a byproduct of protein metabolism. So, you know, rather than voiding it through the urine, I didn't have too much urine left. So didn't have much water to flush it out. So it was flushing it out through the skin.
Wow. That must happen only after a certain length of time that
yeah.
you're running.
Yeah, I think that's only when you started to burn protein. And you know, I probably wasn't fueling right, you know. I was pretty unsure about eating and what to eat and so on. So I think I was dipping into the muscles for fuel.
Do you think that there's a length that which and that you must have gotten close to it where we really can't run any more than that?
Well, it's happened. Yeah, it's happened.
You ran a race in
yeah.
Greece,
yeah.
the Spartathlon,
yeah.
Which was sounds like a brutal race.
Yeah, it was. It was going uphill and uphill and more and uphill. I think I just ran out of fuel. I mean, it's just like a car. Once you burn up the gasoline, I mean, you're it stops. and it was demanding more than I had. So I that was the only. So, but a lot of, you know, in the ultra marathons, a lot of people they walk. You know,
that's right.
A logical thing to do. You get tired and then you walk for a while and then you run again. But I never heard of that. I never stopped in a race all my life.
Oh my
you know,
God.
It just was impossible to stop. You know, I mean, that's like quitting, and
wow.
So I quit.
Wow. We're almost out of time, and I just want to say one of the things that is you repeat several times for people who are listening to this and can't believe that somebody who's 80 would think about running. In running, the hardest and the most important step is always the first one out the door. Can you just elaborate on that? That's a great saying.
Yeah. You know, you think about all the work that it might be, and it's so comfortable sitting in your seat.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But once you're standing, it's already easier. And once you're committed, then you don't have to think about it anymore. The hard part is to convince yourself that you're going to do this. But once you are convinced, you know, that you're going to do it, then the next step is obvious.
You just keep going.
Yeah, just keep going.
As much as you can. Now, you've
yeah.
realized that you probably have hit a certain limit, but are you always going to still run?
I wouldn't say I'm always going to run, but I'm running now. I can't.
Can I ask you, how are you 81 now?
Yeah, I'm 81 and a half, yeah.
Okay. I like how you added a half. Most people are lying about their age. You add the half.
Yeah. I'm gonna add as much as I can.
This is all about pushing that envelope, man.
Yeah. Well, I ran 20 miles yesterday.
Okay, Bern. Make me feel like a schlub.
But I'm not going to do one today.
Bern, we're completely out of time. There's so much in this book, including you make me laugh more than any other guest I have. My returning guest tonight is Bern Heinrich, biologist, writer, and we've been talking about his latest book, Racing the Clock. No kidding. Running Across a Lifetime. He's still doing it. And I recommended you have a great section at the end about how, if and when you die, how you want that to happen with your friends. And I recommend that as reading for everybody, because that's exactly what I want to have happen when I pass. Bern, thank you so much for writing this book. It meant a lot to me.
Okay, well, thank you so much. It's been great talking with you, Mark.
It's always great to talk to you, Bern.
Okay.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.